Regular supplemental meetings are called to order. The supplemental meeting is recessed. Let's get a moment of silence. Okay. First item is the approval of minutes from the regular meeting on January 8th. I get a motion. Can we look over the minutes? Any questions or anything? I get a motion to approve the minutes.
So no move. Second.
Get a second. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Hearing none, the motion passes. On to public comment. Anybody like to comment? I think you raised your hand. Is that correct?
Yeah. There's people. Don't see any.
Okay. Moving right along. Kelly, items for individual consideration.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. The first item I have is the standard ministerial actions. The one item or two items I wanted to point out to you is in February, we had 24 refunds, which was with that. We're hearing some feedback, so I don't know if people on the Zoom can mute their line.
I like hearing it.
Okay. So in February, we had 24 refunds. Part of that is because we had fewer than normal in January because there's a delay in the city recording people as terminated. And also we're working this refund project to try to get old refunds closed out. The more unusual thing is we had 20 retirements. That's the highest month that we've had in over 3 years, but we were not seeing a pattern. It's not like everybody hit a certain age or certain years of service or anything like that. We just a lot of retirements, and we're getting a lot of pre-retirement meetings. So hopefully it's just normal course and nothing unexpected. Are there any questions about this item? Okay. The next item is approval of the trustee education and travel. And Matt has requested to attend the NCEPRS annual conference on March 17th to the 20th. So the board approves, we'll need a motion for that. And I didn't know if there was anybody else that wanted to add their name to any of these items. I add it and you can
add my name to it. Okay. Still got to get approval of it, yeah.
And you can let us know.
So, motion to approve Matt and my travel to NCEPRS in March.
Check that again. Yeah. I was just saying he has young kids and it's spring break.
Say it wasn't me.
I said, I don't know about that, but your wife might be a little irritated.
Yeah.
Oh, we thought it was the May one. That's right. Yeah.
Did we say that?
I thought it was the May one.
It is May. I'm sorry. That should be May. So you're right.
It's May 16th and
17th. Otherwise, take my name.
No, actually, those dates are wrong. It's May 2nd to the 3rd, something like that. Let me look it up.
That early?
Sorry about this.
Well, that's the NA.
Well, there it is right there, 16th, 17th. So it's probably 17th.
We look at the one up above, though.
Yeah, it's the 17th through the 20th.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
May 17th.
So okay. Right. So can we get a motion to approve Matt Filmer and Michael Taglianti's attendance to the May 17th through 20th at CEPRS program in Las Vegas?
So move.
You have a second?
Second.
A motion, a second. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed, say nay. Hearing none, the motion passes. Quarterly financial reports.
Thank you, Tag. Good morning, everyone.
Morning.
I am going to start the fourth quarter review, financial review, with a review of the bridge chart. The bridge chart represents the changes in net position over the period by adjusting investment, benefit, and operations related transactions during the period to arrive at the ending net position. We began the year with a net position of just over $2 billion. We had investment-related transactions that increased the net position of $288 million. We had benefits and operations-related transactions that decreased the net position by $65.8 million. The preliminary December 31st, 2025 net position is $2.256 billion, and that's up $222 million since the beginning of the year. Next, I want to briefly discuss some highlights from the financials. The first statement is the combined statement of fiduciary net position. It compares the results of December 31st, 2025 and 2024. And the first section is investments. Total investment value at December 31st was $2.136 billion, and that compares to $1.93 billion last year. That's an increase of $197 million. The increase is primarily related to changes in the public market over the past year. As we move down the page and we look at cash, cash has increased by $21 million over the past year. We had distributions that were received from investments. We also had rebalancing of about $21 million that went back into cash. And these two items were partially offset by benefit payments exceeding contributions during the year. Next, let's take a look at the changes in fiduciary net position. This schedule also compares the results from December 31st, 2025 versus 2024. And the first section is contribution. Contributions, city and member contributions increased by $33.2 million when compared to last year. As we look at city contributions, they increased $25.5 million year over year. In 2024, the contributions were based on the 34.5% of comp pay plus the annual addition contribution of $13 million. And then beginning in October 2024, the city began contributing based on the city plan. The increased contributions are primarily related to increased salaries and increased staffing levels. As we take a look at member contributions, they've increased by $7.7 million over the past year. The regular and supplemental contributions increased by $7.886 million, and that was partially offset by a decline in pension buyback of $160,000. In employee headcount has increased by 251 since end of last year.
Has meet and confer been? Oh, wow. Hasn't been approved yet. Yes.
Finishes.
And then they start again. Because it's only a year contract.
Finishes voting tomorrow.
Wow.
Yeah, so it'll probably go.
But then, but retroactively, we would get those monies, right? Okay. It's going to be a challenge. Because we have to smooth it out. And, yeah.
From October.
It creates a challenge.
For some.
Yeah. It definitely creates a challenge. That's why I kind of brought it up. But oh well.
But we're
such
up
is life.
As we move down the schedule and we look at net investment income, it increased by $112.2 million year over year. And again, the change is primarily related to changes in the public market. As we continue to move down the schedule and we look at benefits paid to members, they increased by $3.3 million year over year. Breaking that down a little, service pensions increased by $1.3 million. Survivor benefits increased by $2.1 million, and they were partially offset by some declines in disability payments. Again, the primary driver of the increase is new service retirements at higher rates. Are there any questions about the financials? Okay, thank you very much.
Okay, the next item that I have is the revised January 1, 2025 actuarial valuations. And what we did, and I had talked about this, I think last month, that, or maybe the month before, that the city had requested that we revise the GASB 68 reports and the actuarial valuations to reflect the settlement agreement. Previously, the valuations reflect and the reports reflected the plan that the board adopted on August 8th, 2024. We talked to our auditors. They didn't care if we changed it. It doesn't change their work or anything like that. And the city wanted us to do that. So we went ahead and had Siegel make those changes. So we have the revised report here for you. So I'm providing a summary for you. Since the board approved the original reports, I'm looking for the board to make a motion to approve the revised reports, and then I'll send the new ones to the pension review board. So this page shows the difference between the original report and the revised reports for the regular plan. You can see that the total liability went down $300 million from $5.9 billion down to $5.6 billion. And then, of course, the unfunded liability also went down by the same amount. That's because the COLA was taken out, and the stipend actually won't be added in until next year. That's what the settlement agreement, the liability for the stipend won't be added until next year based on the settlement agreement. So these changes increase the funding level slightly from 32% to 34%. The actuarial determined contribution is calculated, even though it's not being paid until 2030. So that went down from $304 million to $257. The ADC as a percentage of payroll also decreased slightly. The years to fund remains the same at 28. And the reason some people have asked, why is that not 30? It was 30 in 2023, 29, 2024, 28, 2025. So these are still on the track. So that's what the numbers look like. Are there any questions on the regular plan? The supplemental plan, the numbers are much smaller, but the story is the same. The COLA was stripped out, so the liability went down $3 million. It's a much smaller plan, so it went from $48 million to $45 million. The funding level went from 47% to 50%, and the years to fund there are 11 years to fund that plan. Questions on the supplemental?
I have a question, just because I've got a lot of members calling to ask me, so I'm sure you have too, on the pay stubs that we're receiving, it shows that the city's putting in substantially less every pay period.
Right.
So it doesn't seem like it's accurate, or maybe it is accurate. I'm just curious. Do you see those statements, or have people been calling? Because it shows that they're putting in less, like 7%.
So I personally have not seen the statement, but we have received a lot of calls on that. And I've actually talked to the CFO at the city and pointed out that this, including that information on their direct deposit advices, is confusing their employees.
Well, it's confusing because is it accurate on what they're actually putting in? I'm curious.
No, it's not accurate because the city is putting in a lump sum amount to pay off the unfunded.
Right.
And a percentage of the employee's normal cost. So, and the percentage of the normal cost is accurate, but it's ignoring the big lump amount. And it's irrelevant for the person's pension calculation.
I get it. It's more of a time thing for you guys having to fill the calls as well for myself. I'm wondering, I mean, it should come from the city. There should be a PSA that comes out to explain this for everybody.
Right. It's an optics issue.
It is.
It doesn't impact their pension, and that's what we tell people. And I have talked to the city to say, you know, the employees are thinking you're putting in less money, so you might want to adjust this or frankly take it off.
Yeah, they do. They think that.
Because it's confusing.
You guys are just catching this now, huh?
No, they've been calling for a while, but I thought it was going to change after we played out the lawsuit.
No.
I thought this
they're
was
just, just less than the normal cost.
That would be attached to this in the last, the last couple pay periods. I was like, this is just, they're saying this for the litigation. This is all going to go. It has to.
They honestly shouldn't even put it on there. It was just their way of bragging that they were helping out, basically. And so before it was a bigger number because, you know, they're matching plus, right? And so
before they were showing 34.5% of pay. Now they're showing 6.66% of pay.
a different way of listing the money, basically.
But it's not really fairly reflective what the city's putting in. So
they're in 30 million.
Okay. Any other questions on the revised reports? If not, I would need a motion to approve those.
In a motion to approve the issuance of the January 1, 2025 revised actuarial valuation report, subject to final review and approval by the executive director.
So move.
A second?
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Any opposed say nay.
Nay.
Okay, the motion passes.
You. Good morning. Moving along to the portfolio update. Estimated year-to-date return through January is 2.6% for the overall portfolio and 2.4% for the public portion, which is 84% of the assets, but that's just 1 month, so I'll get to the bigger news. Staff received notice in mid-January that the Huff Energy Fund had sold their last remaining asset, which is 1776, largely proven undeveloped energy acreage in Eagle Ford Shale. So we received the notice mid-January. We received our share of the initial proceeds about a week and a half ago, which was $127 million. You guys have heard the story on Huff for a long time now, but this was a 2006 vintage private equity fund that we've been quite involved with for a number of years. With kind of a lack of clarity on when it was finally going to sell. It had been in a sales process for probably dating back to pre-COVID. So very good news for us and the portfolio. The sales price was very close to what we had been carrying the asset at the last couple of years. In 2022, we started a process to internally value the asset using Kroll's valuation group, which was a different value than what was reported by the GP. So if we had been using the GP's reported value, we would have had about a $90 million write down based on year-end valuation compared to the proceeds we got back now. There should be another $50 million coming 9 months post-close. So our share of that's about $10 million. So been a long time coming on that investment.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Is there any ability, and again, this is outside the scope of my skill set, but on the sale, that after the fact, within a certain amount of time, if they sell it for a significant amount, can we ever like kind of get a piece of that at some point or no?
No.
It's just done.
Yeah. It's
because what's going on in that Permian base right now is incredibly crazy. And yeah. So just because he didn't have the money to develop it, it's like, is he giving up the wheels for the Ferrari kind of thing? So like, I know it's been a long time coming for us, but yeah. The fact that we're not in a liquidity situation and his heirs don't want to do it and all that stuff. It's like, I just wonder.
Yeah. I mean, there's no potential for us to see any upside out of that. I think what it frees up is a lot of different things for us and kind of not having the 6% of the portfolio.
But and, allocations. That's a good point. That's a very
legacy
good point.
Assets. Yeah. I think, you know, it opens up the ability for us to potentially look at some energy assets in the portfolio. We were massively overallocated to energy before this sold. We have a little bit of upside according to the GP based on future WTI oil price over the next 2 years. So there's potential for $150 million of earnout. Based on if oil price is above 55 a barrel. So there's a little bit of upside built into the contract.
Okay.
But we feel good about the pricing based on kind of all the independent work we did, you know, from 2020 on and talking
about. We'll have our audits done way earlier. I mean, like.
Yeah. So.
What a concept.
Yeah.
What a concept. Yeah.
I mean, like we've talked about it, but this asset was, you know.
Problematic.
We didn't know if it was going to sell in 1 year or 5 years and what the value was going to be. We were planning to finally get proceeds back and have them come back at a substantial value to us.
Okay.
And outside of the lingering earnouts and everything, is there any other assets left through Huff?
No, that's the last remaining. We were in a high yield fund with them. We were in an alternative income fund. Those have all wound down. So this is the last remaining investment with Huff.
Good.
The check.
Yeah, for sure.
That directory. I'll jump into it in a minute. The plan to rebalance those proceeds across the portfolio. The first kind of slug of it that we did was, if you guys remember, we approved the multi-asset credit investment with ICG last summer. We funded the initial $55 million to that investment earlier last week. And then the remaining amounts detailed on the next couple of pages will come from the rest of the public credit portfolio. But this is looking at our asset allocation pre-HUP proceeds coming back. So we're a little bit underweight to public equity with a target of 58. We currently have 56 in the ground in public equity. The HUP investment was just under 6% of the portfolio. So when we talk about rebalancing, it's really where we move that 6% to and why over the near term. You can see we're a little bit above target right now in cash and fixed income, right around target in public credit. And then we have our private asset classes that we can't really move on a dime. So our plan for rebalancing, there's a lot of numbers here, but essentially we are pushing, we already funded the $55 million to ICG. We're pushing the remaining amount of proceeds into core fixed income with IRM and Longfellow, and then into our public credit portfolio. So what we're not doing.
One quick question. Mm-hmm. Funded the $55 million or we allocated the $55
million? We
called it already?
We've already funded it. We sent them $55 million last
week. Okay.
So the target for that investment is a 4% target, which is about $90 million. So that was just the first chunk of money. The remaining money is coming from, we had lowered our targets to bank loans and high yield from 4% to 2% to fund that ICG investment.
So, the remaining, they probably had a first close and we had to true up, and that's why.
It's an open-ended like daily liquidity fund. So it's not, you know, closing, first closing, second closing. It's just, you know, we had some cash available, so we funded the initial amount. And to fund the second tranche, we're going to wait till we get proceeds back from our other two credit managers.
Got it. I'm with you now. Thank you.
So essentially, we're pushing money out into fixed income and credit. What we're not doing is adding any money to the public equity market, even though we're a little bit below target. And why we're not doing that is we're just getting into an asset allocation study where I expect the public equity target could come down from 58%. So we don't want to put money into equity market right now and then have to pull it back out once we get through the asset allocation study. And we also kind of where valuation levels are at, we tactically had underweighted 2% back in November. So we kind of have the same view on equity market. So what this is doing is bringing us pretty close. If you look at like Aristotle Pacific down here, I'll try to zoom in.
Oh, so you mean investing at the Dow at 50,000, maybe a high? I'm totally.
I'm not going to yell Dow 50,000, but so we're essentially, if you look at Aristotle bank loans, we're bringing that up to the top end of the range at 3%. So what likely could occur is we're at the top end of the range in bank loans and close to it in investment grade bonds. So if the market moves down a little bit or passively, we likely could breach the top end of the range. So we wanted to notify the board of that. We don't intend to draw money back out anytime it gets, you know, a little bit over the top end of the range. We've ran a sensitivity on this. If equity markets went down 10%, that would cause these asset classes that are the top of the range to kind of be about 0.5% above target. And that's where I think we would look to start rebalancing back into equities potentially. So we're going to keep an eye on it.
So there are two things in there. One is that you might actually break the policy limits, but then the second question is, are the policy limits too tight? So I guess one of the things I'd ask Ryan is, you guys think about the investment policy statement, if we should give you broader ranges so you can actually be more tactical. That's a question we may want to.
Yeah, I think this is more, I agree with you, this is more of a temporary, like we got a bunch of money back from Huff. Once we have, like the issue that's, it's the reverse issue that we had 2 years ago. Right now, post Huff, we have 10% in private markets compared to a target of 18. So that 8% has to go somewhere. Right. And that's what's causing us to be at the top end of the ranges.
Okay.
These sub ranges on some of these like credit managers are pretty tight. So we might want to widen those a little bit, but I think we, in terms of the IPS and rebalancing flexibility, we now have ability to go kind of within in the range. A year and a half ago, we could only move towards target, which caused some issues where we had to rebalance potentially when we didn't want to, or we had to come talk to the board about it. So I think we have flexibility the way it's designed. As we go through the asset allocation study that we just started, we'll kind of think more about the ranges. And, you know, regardless of where we set these targets, we're not going to deploy the 8% into private markets overnight. So we're going to have this issue for a while. So I think we should think about that over the near term.
I'll just catch up with you after the meeting. I was at a meeting earlier this week with a group that has a pretty interesting short-term, very liquid, backstop by an insurance company thing that,
okay,
it's a big company.
Okay. We'll talk after, but yeah.
Because they're telling me it's 30-day liquidity. And for something that with those kinds of rates, it'd be a much nicer option for your short-term money.
Yeah.
Because we're looking at it right now.
I'd like to hear about that.
Yeah. So, I think what we think about is kind of, where do we want to park this money? What is our funding source for private markets as we start to add capital commitments? So that's part of asset allocation, but we'll talk after. Any other questions on the rebalancing plan? We'll start to move these proceeds next week. The money's coming out of the public credit managers will be at month end, but when we come back next month, all this should have been completed. All right, I'll turn it over to Kyle to run through the rest of the portfolio update.
Great, thanks, Ryan. So on 2026 investment initiatives, slightly different view than what you've seen in past months. Obviously, the large kind of ongoing project throughout this year will be the asset allocation study, which we discussed last meeting. And this meeting, Makita will discuss the investment beliefs and risk survey that we're going to be issuing to the board and IIC. And once we have kind of results from that, we'll start working with Makita to form some mixes and work through the rest of this process to hopefully deliver a final asset allocation proposal to the board in September. And there's some flexibility built into this. Also, is in terms of private equity and private credit, I want to note we have a subcommittee meeting next week where the subcommittee will be reviewing two different private equity commitments in the secondary space. And then lastly, the global equity search is ongoing. We're working towards a final issue in RFP too here shortly. So lots of things going on right now. Want to touch briefly on what's probably been front headlines for most of us, what we've been reading in the last couple of weeks, but AI fears sparked a bit of a sell-off in software stocks. And while these AI concerns have touched other sectors like real estate services, the sell-off has not been broad-based. There's been quite a bit of rotation going on. So to illustrate that, month-to-date through yesterday, the S&P 500 was essentially flat. The S&P 500 equal weight is up 2.8%. And then within sectors, IT and communication services were down 5 and 5.7% each respectively, while energy has been up 7.8% month to date, materials up 7.7% month to date, staples up 5.9% month to date, and industrials up 5.7% month to date. So you're seeing a lot of sectors who have, you know, not been the place to be in the last year have been picking up some steam as this rotation's been occurring. But this AI kind of sell-off has not been exclusive to equities. And I think one of the stories that a lot of people have been talking about in private credit as well as public credit is how these software concerns bleed into those markets. And in ways that aren't as flashy as, you know, what you see in the S&P 500 every single day. So software loans sold off. So this is taking loan data from what's traded within CLOs, which do control the majority of the public market. Within the public market, about 12% of all loans are from the software sector. And that is a greater in private credit, it's closer to 20%. And it depends on the manager. Some are lower, some are higher. KKR, one of our private credit managers, has a 20% exposure to software. I'll note the median LTV of those loans is 39%, so fairly conservative. And they do focus on more established and cash generative software businesses compared to, high growth kind of speculative type positions. And Golub has on the very low end of private credit managers, 15% exposure to software. We're closely monitoring that. We're talking with our managers about it. One thing I'll note is that the, you know, when you see big names in the public BSL market trading down 2 to 4%, what's happening with, you know, much smaller, even though they may be cash generative and good LTVs, much smaller loan positions that are in private credit, it does raise concerns about NAV. So you've seen a lot of BDCs been selling off month to date, something we're monitoring and we'll continue to monitor. Any questions on that software piece?
Do you have any concerns about credit quality, Kyle, going into what I think is a little bit choppy, or you think actually by the time they deploy it, we get the best of the drunks?
Yeah, I mean, it's been such a benign credit environment for the last couple of years that we haven't seen too much real dispersion in the space. So I think it creates, speaking to the public side first, I think it creates interesting opportunities. So we have ICG, who Ryan mentioned, we just funded. They're able to move between bank loans and between the high yield bond market. They also have half Europe exposure, half US, and they can flex that up and down. So I think they're well positioned to move around where there is dislocation in credit. To the private side of the market, I think that one of the things that is hard to really dig into is the difference between what's in a public traded BDC that gets the headline and what's in the fund that we're invested in. And so that's something we've been spending time trying to suss out. And we did receive our first capital call for Golub this last week. And so we're finally kind of getting money in the ground of private credit. So year to date, just one thing, we already spent some time talking about equity markets, but I'll highlight EM equity has had incredibly strong performance year to date. Part of that is driven by the weakening of the US dollar, especially against some of these EM currencies that are heavily tied to commodities, have performed extremely well. And then looking, you know, when we look on a bigger time horizon, obviously when we look back month to date, it's easy to kind of get jitters about certain things, but, you know, tech stocks have continued to be the strongest performer. It'll be interesting to see how long this rotation kind of continues or if it kind of plateaus. So as Ryan mentioned, year to date, our preliminary return through the end of January is 2.6%, bringing our NAV to $2.277 billion. And then on liquidity, just briefly, as Ryan mentioned, we're planning to deploy some of this cash. So this will look a bit different next month as we kind of move this money out. But we will be sitting on the higher end of liquidity compared to our targets, just given what Ryan mentioned. Any questions on the portfolio update? Great. Thank you.
Thanks, Kyle. Moving to the report on the Investment Advisory Committee. Tom, do you want me to run through what we covered?
Go ahead.
Okay. So we had an IAC meeting on January 22nd, where we reviewed a number of items. We kicked off the asset allocation study, which was more kind of initial staff views on where we could take the asset allocation, discuss the survey, timeline. We reviewed the private equity and private credit pacing plans with the IAC, which outlines kind of our level of capital commitments to both credit and private equity for the year. We wanted to get the survey results back before we bring those to the board. So we might have some slight modifications to those, but we plan to bring those to the board likely in March. Reviewed the pipeline on private market opportunities. And then we discussed the upcoming global equity search that we plan to issue an RFP on here shortly. So,
ask you a question on the asset allocation. Again, what is the time frame? Like, what are we thinking about? Like, as far as the duration of these changes?
Yeah. So, what we put on this timeline here follows pretty closely with what we did in 2024, where essentially we have three IAC meetings on this kind of roadmap: January to kick off, April to bring initial mixes back to the IAC, July to kind of finalize a recommendation up to the board. We'll update the board along the way. Kind of, here's where we're going. Do you guys agree? Kind of iterative process between staff, investment committee, and the board. The survey that Makita and us will talk about just in a minute will kind of inform the next few steps in the asset allocation. So that might That's a different wrinkle that we didn't have when we did this 2 years ago, but we would expect kind of it's a lion's share of the first half of the year and kind of into Q3 to get this finalized.
But as far as like, I think the way we've done it before in the past, maybe that we've, it's what is it, 2-3 years out for the asset, but in between it's a tactical changes as you bring it to the board.
We've always set like a long-term target in the asset allocation, but we've talked about our implementation plan on like how we're going to get here. Like I said, when we did this before, we had the problem of being 32% in right. private markets versus a target of 18. So where are you going to be underweight? I think this time it's what are those long-term targets to private market asset classes, and implementation wise, what is the funding source? You know, you kind of overweight public credit while you fund private credit, same thing in public equity to private equity. Those are more of the implementation considerations, or we've talked about Makita adding kind of a risk mitigating bucket that could be a good kind of stable funding source for all those commitments and add some downside protection too. Tom, and anything?
No. Wanted? Good conclusion.
Okay. All right. Moving on, the next item we have on the agenda is the board and ISE and staff and Makita, I guess, investment and risk survey that we've been putting together. We've talked about this the last few months, but Makita and staff have been working very closely over the last month to craft a pretty focused survey that really hones in on risk tolerance of the board, informed by kind of views of the IAC as well. And then also some pretty focused questions on investment processes and how we go about approving investments to go into the portfolio. So with that, I will turn it over to Leo and Colin to walk through a few slides they put together.
Thank you, Ryan, and good morning, trustees, staff, and member of the public. We'll go over these fairly quickly, but I want to make some you know, big picture remarks beforehand. First of all, this is a survey that is done occasionally. As Ryan mentioned, it has been refined as much as possible to be as effective without also taking unnecessary time. So it's not a lot of questions, but they've been pretty specific to you, and they're based in three main categories, and Colin will walk you over that. So what we're asking is for everybody to please set up, you know, 10, 15 minutes to complete it. And we're aiming here for 100% participation. So we'll have, you know, all the stakeholders completed. And the important thing is then we can see, are we all aligned? Are there areas where different parties see things differently, that we need to spend more time to get everybody on the same page so that we can pull together and continue to move forward? I think we're at a very good time in the history of DPFP. The news today that was announced today as it relates to the half distribution is a very important one to reflect. And in my opinion, it highlights the very, very strong work your staff has been, you know, a process that has taken a lot of time to get to this point. I think you probably recall about 10 years, a big sale of private market assets. And some could have been sold, but at probably very low or distressed prices. I went back and took a look at what the value on the book was for half back when we came on board in the spring of 2018, and it was $95 million. So this sale, 8 years later, is at a price above that, and presumably you could have sold that for much less than that face value. If you sold it for maybe half, which I don't even know you could have gotten that price back then, I'm speculating here, and you put it all in equities and you let it run in this market that was very strong, you would have not gotten to the point where we are today. So all I'm saying here is your staff, you know, took on a lot of time, a lot of long hours to try to maximize every dollar that was stuck in problem assets. And in general, I think that has paid off quite well. And I think we're at a point when we now finally have lots of liquidity and flexibility to make decisions. So we're at a good time to engage in this survey, conduct a very thorough asset allocation, and get the fund to move from, you know, somewhat of a defensive playing field to more of an offense to try to capture and get the returns that we need to continue to be on a good train in terms of solvency and good funding progress. So with that, I'll turn it over to Colin.
Great. Thanks, Leo. And good morning, all. I'll just make a few more comments. And we have some slides here on page 120 and 121 that outline sort of the process for this survey. But I'll start by saying that I'll start by reiterating that we believe this is a super important topic. We think it's important to regularly get a pulse on certain topics from members of the board, IAC, staff, and consultants. And this is something that we take the results and we use to build a baseline, and they can help to inform our decisions around asset allocation and portfolio construction throughout the rest of the year. We've had success doing this with other clients broadly and recently, including other public plans. And so we hope to continue that here as well. In terms of the actual survey contents, we've worked with staff over the past few weeks to tailor some questions. I believe there's about 15 questions right now. The survey is ready to go. The topics that we'll include are one, risk and risk tolerance and how that relates to asset allocation and the asset allocation discussion we'll have throughout the rest of the year. The next section is around private markets and alternative investments. What's the temperature on certain investments that are already within the portfolio, new ones that should be considered in these discussions? And then finally, the third section is around governance and delegation, specifically as it relates to private market investment approval process and public market approval investment process. So those are sort of the three main topics that the survey will cover. And as I mentioned, there's about 15 questions in total. Once we collect results from all stakeholders, and that will include the board, IAC members, staff, as well as your consulting team, we'll collect results and present those in a month's time at the next board meeting in March. On the next page, page 121, is a brief table that shows a timeline for this process. Today, we've introduced the topic and we plan to issue the survey. As I mentioned, it's ready to go at this point. So we plan to issue that starting today. You'll have 2 weeks to fill out the survey, and we plan to close that on February 26th. And as I mentioned, we'll present results in a month's time at the March board meeting. The survey will be conducted through Microsoft Customer Voice. This is a Microsoft software that we plan to issue the survey on, and it will come from a member of the Makita team. So we will email out a link shortly to all of you. So keep an eye out for that. I'll go ahead and pause and see if there's any questions from the group at this time.
Just one comment, Colin. I would say these will go for sure within the next 24 hours. If you don't see it on your inbox, please check your spam filter, check your junk folders. If by the end of tomorrow you don't have it, please reach out to your DPFB point contact in a staff, and we'll find a way to get it to you. Thank you.
All right. Any questions on the survey or the process? We're looking forward to seeing the results. I think it'll be informative and kind of help us as we work through the asset allocation. So, all right. Thanks, Leo. Thanks, Colin.
So the next item, the presenters are on their way in, which is great, but while they're coming in, because we'll do the next two items in closed session, I'll just go ahead, if it's okay with Tag, do the executive director's report.
Yep.
So you have your monitors. We had one open records request. It was a standard one. It's been closed. So that's all I have for that. And with that, we'll go into closed session.
Okay. Closed session? Uh-huh. Closed session.
Hello. We're just waiting a minute while John switches over to close up. We're actually running ahead, so we're glad you guys are able to be here.
Thank you all for having us.
Perfect timing.
You're welcome. It's been a pleasure helping them out.
I'm not in my right there. I would say. I will turn my that you can see on.
He planned.
My wife loves her.
Okay, so ready to the executive director's report. So I need a motion to adjourn the regular meeting.
So moved.
Wait a second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed, signify by saying nay. Hearing none, that motion passes. All right, moving to the supplemental meeting. Can I get a motion to approve the minutes for the supplemental meeting for of January 8th, 2026? Wait a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion passes. Any public comments for the supplemental meeting? All right, hearing none, so we move to the quarterly financial reports.
Don't need another presentation.
Oh, sorry. So can I get a motion to approve the issuance of the going down to the revised actuary evaluation for supplemental? Portion motion to approve the issuance of the January 1, 2025 revised actuarial evaluation report, subject to final review and approval by the executive director. Wait a second.
Second.
All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed say nay. And the motion passes. Can I get a motion to adjourn the supplemental meeting? Wait a second.
Second.
All right. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed say nay. Hearing none, the motion passes and we are done.